Welcome back. It's 11:32. Justin Anchor, Chris Kane, and Maddie. I want to thank Red for sending me on the Magic Twitter machine a video of Niall Davis's kick return. He took it deep in the end zone and ran it back 79 yards. He was the defensive back had the angle on him, getting knocked out, but still nice return. And Niall looks super fast. This just in. If you want to check that out, you can see it on Twitter. I'm at Justin Anchor 7, the number 7. If you're interested in seeing that particular video. Thanks, Red. Appreciate you. Before we went into the break, Chris and I were talking after a phone call about potential SEC bowl tie-ins for the coming season. And Chris is so far forward-thinking that he came up with the list for 2014 and beyond. But the list for this year is very similar to the one we've dealt with in the past years. So it sounds like, from what you're telling me, the Independence Bowl may be going off, but it's still in place this year.
Still in play this year, at the very least.
So what do you got?
Okay, so a couple different projections. And these are based on a lot of projections. 13 teams projected to go from the SEC this year. Here's
a couple of them.
Yeah, out of 14.
It's crazy.
It's incredible. Yeah. Projected, of course. Now, here are a couple of the ones that Arkansas probably has more likelihood, if they're going to a bowl game, to go to. So just keep in mind, here are some cities for you. One of them on there would be the Independence Bowl, like we said, Shreveport, of course. And we just heard there's a brand new hotel casino, Margaritaville, Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with that. Been there before. Okay, another one, the Music City Bowl in Nashville. Wouldn't be a bad spot.
Arkansas certainly needs to make good on that trip because the last time we went, it was a great time leading up to it. The town was great. The bowl game was not run so great. I mean, it was compared to a lot of other experiences we've had, especially, you know, like the Cotton.
Mm-hmm.
But the bowl game was so disappointing. I mean, if I remember correctly, that Matt Jones was the quarterback, and they scored on their opening drive, and I'm thinking, this is going to be a piece of cake. Well, then Minnesota wouldn't stop scoring after that, and they won.
Gophers. Can't trust them.
I'd like to go back and try to win that game.
Okay, here's another one, the Compass Bowl, Birmingham, Alabama.
Don't want to go there that much.
Okay. Another one would be the Beef O'Brady's Bowl.
Where's that?
That is down in St. Pete, Florida, Tampa area. And St. Pete's a cool town. I had my bachelor party down there. Really cool town. Love the downtown area.
I cannot see Razorback fans following a 6-win team to St. Petersburg, Florida. I think that'd be a bad move, and they'll probably take an Eastern Division team anyway.
Cool town, but probably not likely. And, in fact, this year they have Missouri as their projection to go down there against East Carolina. ESPN.com does.
Midwesterners are always looking for an opportunity to go to Florida, so that'll be perfect for them.
Okay, down the list. Then we have the Gator Bowl. The Gator Bowl is in Jacksonville, Florida. I wouldn't mind going back to my old stomping grounds for a weekend or a week.
I would love going to Jacksonville. Well, the thing about the Gator Bowl is, though, conversely from what we were just talking about with St. Pete, is you got a little better record probably for going to the Gator Bowl.
So yes.
If you're an 8-9-win team, I'd be pretty excited. Look, if he wins 8 games this year, if the Razorbacks win 8 games this year under Coach Bielema's direction, I should say specifically, there is going to be some excited folks. I mean, that is going to be, you're talking about a fan base that'll be whooped up into a frenzy. They go 8-4 with that schedule, filthy.
ESPN.com projecting that Ole Miss plays Michigan in the Gator Bowl this year.
That would be fun.
A couple years ago, I went to the Gator Bowl. I was down there for Christmas, and Ohio State was in it against University of Florida. Both teams were 6-6 that year. So it can go either way. You can be an 8-win team, 9-win team, and a 6-win team, depending on the year.
I remember that. But you also have two teams with elite cachet.
Yes. It depends on the year.
Okay.
But it's a possibility. Okay. And then really last on this list is the Liberty Bowl in Memphis, a projected places, and actually where they have the Razorbacks going. According to ESPN.com's Chris Lowe, he has the Razorbacks going to the Liberty Bowl against Marshall this year, still against a Conference USA opponent.
Mm. Marshall.
Just a projection. Yeah, Marshall. Memphis, 2 hours away from Little Rock.
No, I think it'll be fine.
Went there a couple years ago, and it was blistery cold.
Yeah, it was not good.
That was when they played East Carolina and Skip Holtz.
Yeah, they went to overtime, and their kicker was worse than our kicker. Not a good game.
No, it wasn't.
Horrible weather and a worse game.
And an 8-win team, nonetheless.
But a win.
8 wins.
Yeah.
8-win team.
Well, and of course, that was a stepping stone for Arkansas to do better things.
Yeah.
And there was a Sugar Bowl and a Cotton Bowl. It was fun after that.
It was.
And it wasn't fun anymore.
Hopefully it'll get fun again.
Woo! Okay.
Positive thinking.
11:37, more sound from Arkansas Media Day from yesterday. Again, thanks to Randy Rainwater and Rick Schaefer of our staff for getting that job done. Saw a story this morning about some potential rules changes coming, and we actually talked to Monty Coleman about this the other day at length, the UAPB head coach and the NFL legend, about targeting fouls. And again, you want to keep kids safe. You also don't want it to get to the point where it's too difficult for defensive players to play at a fast pace and be afraid, because you don't want guys playing afraid either, because injuries can, that can lead to injuries too. So it's a tough deal, and I think everybody understands, you know, that bad impacts can happen even above the shoulders unintentionally. But it looks like, unfortunately, those are going to be punished just the same. So here are some of the rules changes coming. This is courtesy of Rogers Redding, the national coordinator of college football's officiating. Players will be automatically tossed for targeting fouls. So it's targeting fouls, automatic ejection, part one, including targeting and initiating contact with the crown of the helmet and targeting and initiating contact to the head or neck area of a defenseless opponent with the helmet. Doesn't say anything about hitting golf balls at opponents' heads. The foul,
good for you.
The foul itself has not changed. These plays have been subject to the penalty since 08, but the penalty has been stiffened to include automatic ejection plus the 15-yard penalty. The ejection can be overturned by replay review. However, if the ejection is overturned, the penalty will still be marked off. Targeting fouls, automatic ejection, part two. A player is at great risk for being ejected for a launch, so don't leave your feet if you do not want to get kicked out of the game. A crouch, which is followed by an upward or forward thrust to attack with the contact at the head or neck area, leading with the helmet, forearm, fist, hand, or elbow to attack with contact at the head or neck area, or lowering the head before attacking by initiating contact with the crown of the helmet. Should a player be ejected in the second half or overtime, he's also suspended for the first half of the next game. So this is going to be extremely impactful, because the bottom line is, and I told Coach Coleman this the other day, odds are one of your players at least is going to be ejected at some point in the season, whether you want them to or not, whether they teach it or not, whether their intentions are there or not. And this is going to impact outcomes of games potentially. Now, the good news is your starting quarterback probably is not going to get one of these particular penalties.
But if one of your star defensive players gets one like that and they're out, totally changes your outlook on the game. Your game plan could change. And
yeah,
it could end up resulting in a loss.
I think it's safe to say that there's a defensive lineman that plays at South Carolina that if he gets ejected, it could impact them.
Big time.
I mean, if Chris Smith gets kicked.
Trey Flowers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not good.
No, not at all.
Number three, offensive blocking below the waist. The rule establishes a zone for the offense that extends 7 yards on either side of the snapper toward each sideline and goes 5 yards into the defensive secondary and in the other direction all the way to the offensive team's end line. Within the zone, an offensive back who is stationary inside the tackle box and an offensive lineman below inside the 7-yard line may legally block below the waist until the ball has left the zone. Did you get any of that? Me neither. It's very confusing. Anyway, apparently there's been a slight rule change there. Expansion of the 10-second runoff. If a player is injured within the last minute of a half, we've seen teams take advantage of this opportunity.
Definitely.
And this is the only reason for stopping the clock, the opponent may choose to have a 10-second runoff from the game clock. The injured player's team can preserve the 10 seconds by using a timeout.
Okay.
A player may remain in the game via a timeout after his helmet comes off. Now, the rule requiring a player to leave the game for one down if his helmet comes off has been modified to allow the player to stay in the game if his team takes a timeout to adjust the helmet.
I remember hearing about this one.
I don't think that's smart. If you're a running back and you get clubbed and you're not hurt, I don't think they should have to take a timeout to keep you in the game. That's stupid.
Yeah.
Minimum time to spike the ball is the other rule change here. Teams will need a minimum of 3 seconds from the referee's signal. 1, 2, 3. It's a pretty big period of time to spike the ball to allow for another play at the end of a half. Teams must still execute the spike, but they will have a reasonable opportunity for another play. If the clock shows 1 or 2 seconds, a team will only have enough time to run a play without first spiking the ball.
Really?
I think that's stupid.
Why would they do?
That's stupid.
I don't know.
That's stupid. If you have 2 seconds when you get the ball in your hand, you should be able to spike the ball.
I agree.
That's stupid.
Les Miles tried to do it with one. Didn't work out.
What are they doing?
Spike! 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 No!
Changing jersey numbers during a game is the seventh rule change here. If a team wants to use a player at different positions during the game and the player needs to change jersey numbers, the player must report to the referee who will in turn announce the change. In addition, two players who play the same position at different times in the game may not wear the same number during the game. Two quarterbacks may not both wear 12, and typically I don't ever see two guys even on the same side of the ball,
no,
let alone the same position.
I didn't even think it was allowed to be on the same side of the ball.
Apparently it is. Huh. But I've seen, you'll see like a defensive back wearing 5 and then Darren McFadden
wearing
5. Do
you remember seeing Lane Kiffin would switch around numbers on his players last year, maybe the year before, to try and throw off teams? Like the kicker and the quarterback would switch so he could run a fake?
No.
I remember seeing that, reading a story about it. It was cheap, and some called it dirty, but within the rules.
Huh.
Yeah.
And last on this list, uniform numerals must contrast with the color of the jersey. The color of the jersey number itself must be clearly and obviously in contrast with the jersey, regardless of any border around the number. For example, teams will not be allowed to wear black numbers on black jerseys with a border of a bright color around the numeral. It must clearly contrast with the jersey in and of itself. I was also told that, and I don't know if this is a new rule or not, that teams' uniforms, home teams' uniforms, have to contrast with their home field. So say you're a green team on a green field, or in UCA's case, a purple and gray team on a purple and gray field, which makes it really unique for them.
It does. Or Boise State, a blue team on a blue field.
Or if you're Eastern Washington, a blood-red team on a blood-red field.
Interesting. Well, yeah, it could serve as an advantage. Can't see them as well. And the number outline, I think that's directly in relation to what Oregon does and their different variations of uniforms.
I don't think when you're on the field it's that contrasting. It does make it difficult for broadcasters at times.
Yeah.
UCA also has switched from Nike to Adidas. So hopefully, because Sully always complained about their old jerseys, they were hard to read. And with all the substitutions that Coach Conk does offensively, it really becomes difficult. In this case, it'll be hopefully a little bit easier. I haven't seen the new Adidas jerseys yet, but they do have media day tomorrow. So I'm hoping to get up there and see what the new jerseys look like.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
New jerseys. See what I did right there?
Yes.
That's
a lovely accent you have there.
Thank you. It's called raspy. Defensive lineman Charlie Partridge with my man Rick Schaefer. I like Coach Partridge. Certainly his unit is going to be a very key cog in this team and any potential success and hopes of getting to one of the 74 bowl games that Chris just mentioned.
Charlie, what did you think when you got here that your first thing that you needed to do when you saw this group of defensive line?
Well, first thing I realized right away is that I was going to have to earn their trust, but at the same time, make sure they understood the line of respect. By that, I mean they've been through a lot. You know, they're on their third head coach in however many months. The way things happened here was certainly unique, and I just had to make these guys understand that even though three of them were seniors, we were going to treat them as if they were seniors that we had been with for 4 or 5 years. And to walk in the door and say that is lip service. I knew I was going to say it and then have to prove it over time.
On the other hand, they're three pretty good seniors.
Yeah, they are. And I'll tell you what, they're performing well right now. And I'll tell you, our junior, Trey Flowers, is doing a nice job too. But really excited to see what Herbs did with him this summer, and it's carried over onto the field the first 5 days.
Many would say you inherited the strongest position area on the whole football team. Would you agree with that?
You know, I think that we have a good group. I don't necessarily know that it's the best, but I'm happy with the guys that are in our room, and I think we'll hopefully be able to do some things this fall.
The Big Ten is known as a very physical league. The SEC is the physical plus the speed. As you look at the videos of other SEC teams, how do you think this defensive line compares?
I think it compares. I really do. I think with the kids that we have, the experience that we have, I think that we can compete with anyone that's on our schedule. To make a direct comparison to one or the other, I don't think I could do that. But this is a pretty unique group in that you have speed on the outside and you got great power inside. And the thing we have to do is to continue to develop some depth, because right now I'm not sure who the third end would be. I'm not sure who the third tackle would be, but fortunately there's competition there to breed that.
That is Charlie Partridge. Man, this doesn't sound like What I Like About You by the Romantics, does it? The Romantics sound a lot like Lenny Kravitz these days. Totally ignoring me. Chris Kane's here. I'm here.
I am.
I'm Justin Anchory, in case you don't know. This raspy voice devil is Justin Anchory.
Happens to be.
Yes. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what's happening with a very special charity, the Arkansas Rice Depot. They have a telethon, which is coming up Thursday. It's on a competing television network, Chris, so you may want to sit this one out. But it's still for a good cause, and I know you can support that.
Yes, I'm all about causes.
I know you are. 11:46, so we'll tell you about that coming up. Admittedly, if I'd have been thinking more clearly, I might have waited for a day you weren't here. I'm an idiot. This just in.